SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
Hello and welcome back to The Secrets of the Hobbit, the show where we bring you up to speed with everything that is going on in New Zealand surrounding the production of the two Hobbit movies. At the helm, Peter Jackson, of course, and among the cast, many people that we've already seen in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, but also a lot of new actors. And of course, it's about this wonderful story that was first written as a children's story. But I think with all the backstory that Tolkien developed later on, it's ample material for Peter Jackson to scale it up in a way to the kind of epic story that we've also seen in The Lord of the Rings. And to talk with me about what's happening in the world of Middle-earth is my good friend Dave Kale.
Hello, Father. How are you, sir?
I'm good. It's great to have our regular moment in the week during which we can talk about The Hobbit, about the news, or the lack thereof. And I think that's This is one of these kind of slow weeks, isn't it? It's not a whole bunch of blogging going on Ian McKellen's page, not a lot of Facebook postings or questions answered by Peter Jackson. Have we anything to talk about, or are we just going to imitate Gollum for half an hour? Which I can totally do.
Well, we're certainly not going to imitate Gollum, but
what, yeah, you have something against Gollum?
It was a pretty slow week in terms of actual news, like new things happening and stuff. But that's certainly not going to stop us.
It never stopped us before, so.
That's right.
So sit back and relax, you listening to your iPod or iPhone or computer right now, or perhaps you're listening to us on the Middle Earth Network radio station, because if you like Tolkien, you'll hopefully like a bit of speculation about the story. And we know that you guys are listening because every once in a while we get some feedback from listeners, and that's always very exciting to actually notice that people are paying attention to our weekly hour of speculation and talk. We got a great email from Matt Shaw. And his avatar name, or how would you call that? Like his on screen name is Silmarillionaire.
Well, what that actually refers to is he's a member of the Tolkien Professor's Silmarillion Seminar, and that's the name we refer to one another by.
Oh, I thought it was just his screen name.
No.
That sounds like a great business book, like How to Become a Silmarillionaire.
Yes.
Apply the dragon's seven steps to personal wealth.
Yes, that's exactly right. And my memory could be fuzzy, but I think I'm actually the one that coined the term Silmarillionaire.
Oh, wow.
I want to toss that out there.
That's very good. You should trademark it.
Yes, good point. I'm getting on that now. Going to go register the URL and...
Laura in the chat room is like, not! It was me! So there you go. The first trademark battle has already started. I bet you that Steve Jobs is going to snatch the domain name before any of you two can get to it.
That's true.
He's going to do like a Middle-earth cloud service. The iHobbit. We think you're going to love it. It's automatically downloading... Hobbit news from the cloud, from the iCloud, from iMiddle Earth. It just works. We think you're going
right.
to love it.
It just
anyway,
works.
That's the Steve Jobs lingo. We're talking about the Hobbit here. How do we get to Steve Jobs? Oh, well. Here's what Matt writes. I really enjoyed the latest episode of Secrets of the Hobbit. I agree with Dave that the White's Council assault on Dol Guldur need not to be a full-fledged battle. It could be handled as a mission with the council accompanied by a small group of trusted warriors like Legolas and others. So what do you think about that? Not a full-fledged battle, just a small group, trusted warriors. They have a little chat at Dol Guldur, and then they go back home again.
Yeah, that's an interesting notion, actually. I hadn't thought about generally that's how I had imagined it, that it would be a small mission, mm-hmm. and that there would be some sword fighting and some, you know, killing of orcs and trolls and spiders and whatnot. But there wouldn't be a huge battle, and that there probably wouldn't be a mano confrontation with Sauron, but rather that Sauron would maybe flee before they actually reached him or something. Mm-hmm. But the part that I hadn't considered was maybe Legolas. Maybe that's the role he'll play. We've been trying to figure out where he fits in. Mm-hmm. We sort of thought maybe he would be at Mirkwood and that maybe he would go to the battle. But maybe that's what they'll do. Maybe they'll send Legolas on this mission instead of sending him to the battle. And that's the reason I think that's interesting is because that could allow them to sort of partition the movie. In other words, they could execute the parts of it that are from the Hobbit book about the way it is in the book, you know, maybe with some cosmetic changes so it's not quite so goofy, but mm-hmm. rather than introduce new characters into the Hobbit story and make changes directly, they just sort of basically leave the main Hobbit storyline alone, and then they have this other stuff that's going on the side, and so that would be very interesting, and maybe that would make the purists happy.
And you know, that's actually a very good point, that if they would use the character of Legolas for that, it helps bring that side story would create a stronger bond with the audience to that side story. Otherwise, it can just be kind of, this is what else is happening in the world of Middle Earth, but it doesn't feature your favorite hobbits or dwarfs, so it's not going to be too interesting. I mean, that's the big danger. If you tell backstory that doesn't feature anyone that we can relate to, it might become a little bit anonymous or boring. If you put a guy in there, an elf in this case, that we already relate to, and at least part of the audience will absolutely, it's him again, Orlando Bloom, our favorite pirate slash elf slash whatever else he's doing in movies that I don't follow. But then that might actually help create more, I don't know, of audience participation. So, yeah.
Yes, that is an excellent point. That's a very, very interesting point. I hadn't thought about that.
From a filmic point of view or a storytelling point of view, it kind of makes sense to get... You have to give these, especially if it's about a confrontation, it's something that's more a bit more political in a way, it needs to have a face. You know, you need to have... it cannot just be happening between people that we don't really know and don't care about. At least mm-hmm. they can do that, but then it will become a little bit like what we've seen in the prologue to The Lord of the Rings, where it's interesting to get that backstory, but the first time I watched that, I was like, well, what's going on here? I don't know any one of these characters, and so I didn't care that much, and it was only after seeing the whole trilogy, and then I rewatched that whole prelude to the story, that, oh, wait a minute, that's Elrond. Now I see that must be, you know, and you get a little bit more of an emotional attachment to that particular part. So I don't know. On the other hand, I think if you put Legolas into the Hobbit story, there is this audience participation expectation, at least from part of the audience, that there will be some quirky remarks between Legolas and dwarves. You need to have that comic relief thing, you know, perhaps not the surfing on a shield, but definitely some humor in there, because I think that was a great addition to The Lord of the Rings, is this bickering between Legolas and what's his name? Gimli. Yeah, I've been playing way too much Lord of the Rings online, and so I've got all these different dwarf names in my head. It's like, what's this dwarf again? But and of course Gimli is not in this story, but there could that's why I think there could also be a scene where, you know, it's happening when the dwarves and Bilbo arrive at the was it at Mirkwood? You know, with the barrels and everything. That some.
Well, that's arriving from Mirkwood to Lake Town.
There you go. Well, that you know, in the whole confrontation between the Bilbo's company and the elves, we will see Legolas there, and then there might be some bickering going on. I don't know. Perhaps they can do both. I have no idea. But it's interesting remark by Matt. I didn't realize that. It's this could definitely be part of the way of the approach, Peter Jackson's approach to retelling this story, and so his character might be less trivial than we initially thought. He might actually have a role in the story.
Yeah,
and not just the looks, not just we've got the nice looking elf again for our female audience,
and not just shield surfing, but actually participating in the story.
That would be cool. Now, Matt also writes, as for Sauron's appearance, I can see him as a sort of uber wraith. Or perhaps he could be portrayed by Benedict Cumberbatch. Yeah, it could be an uber wraith, although we've already seen something like that. The first time we see Sauron in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, in that kind of epic prelude, he doesn't have a face either, does he? He's just got this big
not
helmet.
Really, just sort of a suit of armor.
So there is a little bit of that ring wraith kind of look to it, but more bulky, more of a warrior, less elusive, perhaps. I don't know. It might diminish the impact of the ring wraiths when we see them first in The Lord of the Rings, if he looks just like another one. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's going to work. Or they might do what they do in Lord of the Rings Online, where you've got the ring wraiths actually have a pretty big role throughout the storyline, you know, that's in the background of the game. They sometimes will dress up these spirits in like a kind of like fancier clothes, like a bigger, like a red robe all of a sudden, and a big helmet, and it's still kind of the same, but different enough to kind of, because they have to make sure that these wraiths have like different roles in the story. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I will be surprised. I hope that something will leak out at one point.
I'm sure it will.
How Sauron will look. And then Matt also writes, one thing I'm wondering about is how some of the characters will be handled. Now, this is an important question, and we talked about this before. Will the spiders and the eagles actually speak like they do in the Hobbit story? That may be hard to pull off. I'm guessing that the trolls will speak, because that is an integral part of the story. However, these will be very different trolls from the speechless variety portrayed in the Lord of the Rings films. Yeah, what do you think about that, Dave? Will we get talking animals?
That's a very interesting question.
We've seen talking animals in...
obviously, the trolls... I expect the trolls will be done pretty much the way they are in the book. Because they're pretty... That's kind of a funny little scene. And that'll be sort of a nice... I feel like humor stuff will go over better earlier in the film. When things are still a little bit lighter mood and Bilbo's still kind of a doofus.
Mm-hmm.
The spiders, that's a good point, because I think they have to make them speak. Well, maybe not. I don't know. But I can imagine that the scene will sort of have sort of a cognitive dissonance if, on the one hand, we're supposed to be scared of them because they've wrapped up the dwarves and they're threatening to eat them or kill them, and they're attacking Bilbo and stuff. I'm sure they'll be probably somewhat portrayed like Shelob was. And on the other hand, when they're sitting there and talking and saying, you know, funny little things, and Bilbo's singing songs at them to make them mad and stuff, I mean, there'll sort of be an inherent conflict in the sort of dark horror and tension of that scene. And then, you know, like Bilbo running around singing a song and the spiders getting really mad and and saying stupid stuff. So that's a good point. I wonder, I could see how there's going to be a challenge in if they actually present creatures like the spiders speaking, how do you make sure they don't look stupid?
They can always do it in a way that they did it in the Harry Potter story, where if these creatures speak, because I think there are spiders there too. And isn't there this big mm-hmm. spider that talks?
Yes.
Might Aragog. Actually he might be inspired by, I'm actually pretty sure that was inspired by the Lord of the Rings and by the Hobbit, but it's in a very creepy way, and I think the same thing with the trolls. In Lord of the Rings Online, the orcs and the trolls, they speak, but it's kind of their own kind of weird language, and it doesn't come across as this is weird, all of a sudden we've got speaking trolls. I don't know. I think they could probably pull that off. It's more like the tone. What are they going for? Are they going to preserve the kind of humorous, lighthearted tone of the way that Tolkien told the story in The Hobbit, or will they kind of upscale that, make it more threatening, darker? I don't know. I'm not too worried about it, actually.
Yep, me neither.
I think
they'll pull it off. It may not be exactly what we want, but I'm sure it'll be well done and tasteful regardless.
The only question, of course, is if we've seen these animals talk or these creatures talk in The Hobbit, will it be weird if they don't speak in the Lord of the Rings trilogy? But then again, why would they? Perhaps they've just, they're too focused to, let's capture Frodo and they don't need to talk. I mean, that I don't know. Perhaps they have the ability to speak, but they just don't chatter all the time. I don't know. And there's actually some animal talk on top of Sauron's tower, where Gandalf is speaking to the moth, isn't it? I mean, we hear him whisper. We don't really understand what's going on there. But
that's true. The eagle picks him up, and so you presume that she probably, or that he probably was speaking to the eagle as well. So, it'll be interesting. And there actually aren't that many animals that speak in The Hobbit. Maybe there are more. The eagles certainly do. The spiders certainly do. And then there's the ravens speak, and there's the thrush that everybody can speak to. So yes, there's a little more animal talking. It'll be interesting to see how they handle that. Because I guess to an extent that does start to make it feel a little more like a kid's book.
Perhaps they will just, pick the moments that these animals mm-hmm. really need to say something for the benefit of the story. And if it's not really necessary for the flow of the story that these animals talk, perhaps they'll just leave it out.
Just kind of downplay it a little bit. I think you're probably right about that. It'll be very interesting.
It's not going to turn into a Disney movie.
And regarding the trolls, it's not as though the trolls in the Lord of the Rings books are portrayed as speaking either. And to some extent, those trolls are quite different from the trolls that are portrayed in The Hobbit. The trolls in the Lord of the Rings are marching around in an army, and the only time we ever see them is amidst battle, and we just hear them shouting and yelling. And the reality is that the human beings we see in the battles aren't speaking much either. They're too busy fighting and whatnot. Sauron's return to power, and all of these creatures, trolls, orcs, the like, are to varying degrees enslaved by him. And so his power's really grown by the time of the Lord of the Rings, and so he's exerting greater control over them. On the other hand, in The Hobbit, these trolls are independent, or a little more independent, and they're scavengers who are out waylaying travelers, and they're not engaging. They're not slaves marching off to war. They're bandits living out in the middle of the wilderness, and so they have time to sit around a fire and speculate what's the best way to cook some dwarves and things like that.
But it could be that they're if you have like a lot of different people and a lot of different hobbits, there might be a lot of different trolls. I mean, I do know that Tolkien himself has different type of trolls in the stories that he wrote. You've got the stone trolls. Well, these are the trolls that Bilbo meets with their Cockney accents, and they talk mostly about food and drinking beer. So, and they even their names is like Tom and Bert and Bill, Bill Huggins. That sounds kind of awkward but these yes. are just stone trolls, but you have hill trolls as well. And these are the trolls that killed Arador, the chieftain of the Rangers of the North, the grandfather to Aragorn. So the Arador was Aragorn's grandfather. He was killed by hill trolls. Mm-hmm. You've got cave trolls that we see in Moria. Mm-hmm. That's basically the huge big cave troll, right, that attacks Frodo's company. And
yep.
He looks like that's just brute force. He doesn't need to talk because he probably never learned how to talk. He's just this big tank that is destroying yep. everything.
And on the one hand, it's not, no one ever actually sits with the orcs. We mm-hmm. actually get people talking about how there's different sort of breeds or different mm-hmm. Races of orcs. They explicitly, because there are cases where we see orcs from different places. The orcs of the Misty Mountains, the orcs of the that come yeah. from Isengard, and the orcs from Mordor, and they're all different. And they speak specifically about the Uruk-hai being the high, sort of the high orcs of the Third Age, and the sort of half the goblin men that Saruman was creating. So they explicitly mention, different races of orcs, and yeah. they're explicitly portrayed as different. With the trolls, it's not quite so explicit. They don't clearly say this troll is different from this troll. And no, it's entirely possible that when they're saying cave trolls, hill trolls, that they're just, attaching yeah. a title to those trolls.
But I think that
at the same time, yeah. it's probably pretty likely there's different kinds of trolls. If there's different kinds of everything yeah. else, probably that's true of trolls too.
But I think, it might be true that it's not as explicit as with the orcs, but I think that Tolkien uses various names, or at least the characters in the story use different names for these trolls.
Yes.
I mean, they talk about snow trolls.
Yeah, they definitely do. I'm just saying, I'm not, it's not...
It might just be the same.
He never explicitly yeah. makes it clear what they mean by that. But on the other hand, he's not so careless with words and titles and names.
True.
He uses them pretty he uses them for purposes. So I think it's fair to bet that they're probably at least somewhat different.
Yeah.
So I think your point stands.
I think I'm pretty much sure that the trolls that we'll see in the famous scene with Bilbo will not mm-hmm. look as scary as the big cave troll.
No, I think you're right.
That must
just
be
much more comical.
Yeah, I think it's just the dumb cousins, or perhaps the more intelligent cousins of the cave troll.
The more intelligent, less sinister.
Yeah. And perhaps, I don't know, perhaps these trolls are maltreated also by Sauron and by the orcs, and that's perhaps why they are so angry. There might be this whole psychology behind their behavior. There might actually
yes.
be a reason. You know, if they would just talk to a shrink, then they would be so much kinder. I don't know. This show is quickly heading for let's see, let's go back. I need to finish this email by Matt Shaw. He also writes, if you ever foresee a slow news week like this week, I would be honored to come on the show to speak on the Rankin Bass Hobbit film. This is the animated Hobbit film. While probably not an expert, I'm certainly an enthusiast. I have watched the movie several times and have listened to the complete audio track from the film at least 100 times. Holy moly.
Oh, no.
That is amazing. There are many aspects I loathe about the adaptation, but there are also many qualities that I actually applaud. Well, we got to get him on the show. I want to hear, what makes him watch to the audio track for 100 times.
Are you familiar with the Rankin Bass animated film?
Yeah, I've seen it once. Well, actually, okay. I've seen it once a long time ago, and I've watched part of it not too long ago.
And you know all
ago.
the goofy like songs and music, right?
Oh, yeah. It's almost as bad as the audio adaptation.
Maybe should we play a bit of one for the listeners?
Okay.
I just sent you a link if you want to.
Yeah, let's see if I can play this. This is on YouTube. And this is a song, 15 Birds.
In five fir trees, their feathers were fanned in a fiery breeze.
This is an orc song.
Funny little birds, they had no wings. Oh, what shall we do with the funny little things? Oh, what shall we do?
It's funny, these orcs are riding wargs. But the wargs are very small compared to what we saw in the movies.
Yes.
And then Gandalf chases them away with a firebolt. And then they're back with even more wargs. It's quite a cheerful song for orcs that look so mad and angry.
What they're talking about is killing and burning dwarves alive.
Yeah, now they're setting fire to the tree in which Bilbo and Gandalf and the others are hiding.
They never show us the orc who's riding around in the back of their ranks with the synthesizer creating the music that they're singing to.
Oh my goodness. Well, they have lots of huge heavy instruments with them when they first meet Bilbo, so perhaps one of them is carrying a synthesizer. I don't know.
We should definitely have Matt on to talk about the Hobbit.
We should. Okay, well, we extend this invitation right now. Just get in touch with us, Matt. And thank you so much for that feedback. If you want to reach us and give us some feedback, or you are an expert on goofy orc songs, we'd love to hear from you. Just send an email to tolkien@sqpn.com or let us know that you're listening on our Facebook page. Just look for The Secrets of the Hobbit. So, we already talked many times about the changes that Peter Jackson is going to make to the story, and the question, the concern of the fans and experts, you know, is going to be for the better or for the worse? Is he going to do this the right way, or is he going to upset us all by, you know, including these wacky orc songs? The Guardian published an article this past week about exactly that same question. Will Peter Jackson's Tolkien tinkering make or break The Hobbit? What was the gist of the article, Dave?
Oh, it's just talking about how I think it was written in response to Orlando Bloom being cast, and this guy who wrote this blog has wrote a similar one back in December that this is just yet another sign that Peter Jackson that what this project is for Peter Jackson is not a film adaptation of The Hobbit, but in fact a full-blown prequel to the other Lord of the Rings films that he's making. He says, he's speaking about the titles too. The individual monikers do add to the continuing sense, however, that Jackson is working hard to forge a ring-style high fantasy epic from rather unlikely source material. So, and he says, let's see, tracking little clues that tell us that Jackson wants a radically souped up hobbit and mulling over whether manifestations of this desire will end up being intelligently crafted or ham-fisted on the big screen has, however, become something of a hobby recently, especially as more and more details begin to emerge. So it's just, you know, it's sort of he doesn't get into too many details. He hits on the White Council in Dol Guldur, as we just discussed and as Matt wrote about. And he speculates about what shape Sauron will take. He speculates about Christopher Lee and what his role as Saruman will be in this. He speculates about what role Orlando Bloom as Legolas might have. So anyway, It's just basically it's a blog where he gets into a lot of the same issues we've discussed and just wonders sort of out loud, what does this all mean? What is Peter Jackson really trying to do, and how's it going to play out? Is it going to work, or you know, will they go overboard and it will end up feeling disjointed, and it'll feel like we're watching two separate movies that have been combined into one somehow? That I would say, if I had any one worry, that would be it, that we're going to be simultaneously watching two movies. There'll be the Hobbit parts, and then there'll be these other things with the White Council, and they won't interplay very well. But yeah, so basically I think this guy, and there's another article we have that speculates similarly. Basically, they're just responding to the slow Newsweek too.
Well, the article makes one, I think, a very good point.
Sure.
After the various speculation about how, will this be a good thing or a bad thing, the article says, well, having said this, Jackson is really only doing what Tolkien himself attempted to do after the publication of The Lord of the Rings. The author also revised his earlier tome in an effort to smooth out stylistic differences. Gollum was made more sinister and his dependence on the ring more unnerving in the 1951 edition. But a later, more radical revision was abandoned after Tolkien realized that he would have to make too many changes. Do you know anything about that whole revision story? I have this two-tomed book about the making of The Hobbit, basically, or it's the history of The Hobbit, and it just goes over all these different variations of the scripts and revisions and everything. But I've not had the courage to read those books. But I'm curious now, especially about that later revision that he planned.
Yeah, I haven't. So it's been a while since there's a lot of information you can glean from his letters about this. He talks about this extensively. I would say, in my copy of the letters of J.R.R. Tolkien, I would say a significant portion of it, maybe the first third of it or so, is really focused on The Hobbit specifically, and what he imagines will go into the quote unquote sequel, which turns out to be The Lord of the Rings. And you can see, as you read those letters, you can see an evolution of his thought from early on when he's talking about a sequel to The Hobbit. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about when you see the elements that he imagines going into it, it sounds a lot like The Hobbit. It sounds very sort of fairy tale-ish and very sort of like a kid's story. There's going to be a giant, and it won't be a party going on to some dangerous quest, but sort of more of an individual guy going on an adventure, kind of like The Hobbit is. And then you start to see, as he writes it, that the actual story takes shape, and he starts connecting it to this other mythology that he has of Middle Earth. And it becomes more of an epic story and involves a war and things. And then what you see as he gets really far down the road writing The Lord of the Rings, he starts revisiting The Hobbit and saying, boy, I'd really like to go back and make The Hobbit, he has more and more dissatisfaction with The Hobbit as it is, as time goes on, as The Lord of the Rings takes shape. And as he starts to fit all these stories into the larger mythology, I think there's really a strong desire on his part to go back to The Hobbit and rewrite it. As this Guardian author says, Ben Child, he says, that it just, I think as he got older, you can kind of see that he I think into the 50s and 60s, he starts running out of energy. He just doesn't have the energy and time to really take on these writing tasks anymore. After he finishes The Lord of the Rings, and he's, trying to do some revisions of the Silmarillion, he just sort of kind of starts running out of steam and just doesn't have as much time or energy to really get into it. And I think maybe that's part of what happened with The Hobbit, that he just eventually is like, I'm going to have to completely rewrite this book, and it's going to probably end up being 1,000-pager just like Lord of the Rings, and I just don't have the energy for it. So it's sort of an interpretation and speculation on my part, but that's the impression I get. But I think Ben Child is right here. I think if Tolkien had had the time and energy, I think he probably would have rewritten The Hobbit into a more serious book.
Yeah. Hey, I just took the two books called The History of the Hobbit from my bookshelf behind me. And I'm actually, I found a bit of information about this revision that was never never done. This is in the chapter, this is in the second tome, part two. This book is, by the way, by John D. Ratliff, I think. Mm-hmm. It has a chapter about the 1960 Hobbit. And he quotes Humphrey Carpenter, who is an author that kind of wrote about Tolkien's life, so wrote a biography. And Humphrey Carpenter describes how Tolkien began. I think his publisher was insisting that there would be like a revision of The Hobbit. He spent many hours searching for some revision notes that he had already made, but he could not find them. And when the next day he did get down to The Hobbit, he found a great deal of it very poor and had to restrain himself from rewriting the entire book. So and this was after he had written the Lord of the Rings. So he clearly was like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I have to rewrite everything. Now, the interesting information here, these revision notes, the fifth phase or 1960 Hobbit, are far more extensive than Carpenter's account indicates. In fact, nothing less than a wholesale recasting of the book into the mold of its sequel. Aside from this passing mention in Carpenter's book, this material remained wholly unknown until Christopher Tolkien, his son, read a substantial section from it as his guest of honor presentation at the 1987 Marquette Tolkien Conference, MythCon 18. It is here published in its entirety for the first time. So this book actually has these revisions, and that's interesting. So they do reprint a lot of these notes. Now, it has some information about that revision. The 1960 Hobbit does not form a continuous text, but rather a series of passages, some brief and some extensive, intended to replace their second edition equivalents, very much as the fourth phase replaced or superseded passages from the first edition. Now, you can tell that this book is very thorough in the way that they describe all these changes. It's very encyclopedial in a way, or encyclopedic. This is very, very cool. So they actually have those replacement passages in here, and it's about a well-planned party. Let's see, what else did he rewrite? The Broken Bridge and Arrival in Rivendell. So three big passages that have been rewritten. I'm going to read this. And you know, in one of our future episodes, I want to get back to this theme, because this actually might also have inspired Peter Jackson in his kind of revision of the story. I wouldn't be surprised that he actually took clues from the ideas that Tolkien was already developing about the style of The Hobbit. So that could give more weight to his own adaptation if he can say, well, hey, there are some notes by Tolkien himself. He was already thinking in the same way. He just didn't have time.
I would be very surprised if Peter Jackson has not been drawing from those. I'm sure he has. I imagine he owns all these books.
Now, this might be a good point in the show to do a little break to talk about one of the sponsors of our show. This show is brought to you by the SQPN Amazon store. Now, I always order stuff like this on the Amazon store because, you know, the history of The Hobbit, that's very specialized Tolkien literature. Normally in a regular bookstore, you're gonna spend some time trying to find this, and most of the stores only carry the popular titles, and you will not find stuff like this. And if they have it, they usually have just one copy, and it's very expensive because, you know, they know that the people that will read this stuff, it's not the big masses, so they can just upsell this and put a big price tag on it to make some money on. So I always go to Amazon because they cater to a worldwide audience, so their margins can be smaller because they sell more. Now, if you order books, there's one thing that I want to let our listeners know: you can actually support our show by first going to our website. So if you go to either our main website, sqpn.com, or you go to our Hobbit website, which is thehobbit.sqpn.com, there is an Amazon banner. And if you click on the Amazon banner to go to the Amazon store, if you order something on the Amazon store, we will get a small percentage of the profit that normally Amazon would keep for themselves. So that's just a very easy way to support us. It won't cost you anything, but I just wanted to mention it. And you know, the Amazon store is a great place, I think, for they have almost everything, including secondhand books that are no longer in print. So I was able to find some stuff that is, you know, it's just not, it's not on sale anywhere. And instead of having to kind of scout the web and trying to find that, they just have secondhand stuff. And you can get some really, even out of print editions of former editions of The Hobbit. It's just a great, great place to shop. So let's get back to our show. That was some more speculation in Slow News Week. Wired also has an article a bit in the same style, isn't it?
Yes.
Is it going to be more awesome or more awful?
Virtually, and it covers almost, it has the same quotes from Jackson and other folks, and covers pretty much the same material.
So
Dol
that's
Guldur,
easy.
Dol Guldur, White Council, Galadriel, Sauron, Saruman, Legolas.
Gosh. Oh well. Then I guess
minds think alike, maybe.
Yes.
Oh, and it actually references the Guardian article too, I think. He says, as reported in the Guardian.
Oh, so it's just a rewrite of the Guardian article.
Yes.
Let's rewrite this instead of just blatantly copy and paste, because we will get sued for that.
Yes.
Interesting. Well, but the Wired, of course, has a big international audience, whereas I guess the Guardian, that's more of a British audience. So it makes sense. Now, in other news, some people are so excited about the world of Tolkien that not only will they listen to this podcast and to our sister podcast called The Secrets of Middle Earth that we recently rebooted, and of course you've listened to our latest episode where we make a tour, we go on a tour of Bree and the surroundings of Bree, and then we end up in the Lone Lands, and we have two more episodes that we're currently producing, or we're in post-production with some interviews with very cool Tolkien experts. Anyway, that just keep an eye on that as well on sqpn.com. But some people are so excited that they actually dress up as hobbits or as elves and have a big get-together, a reenactment of Lord of the Rings stories. And this happened in a strange place for hobbits, I would say, at Toronto Airport?
Yes.
What's that about? Aboot.
So let's see. I'll read the opening paragraph just to set the stage. Travelers, and this is from rabble.ca, which is, I think, a sort of a political web news site, and the author is Judy Rebick. Travelers at Terminal 3 in the Toronto airport were astounded Tuesday morning to see Gandalf the Grey and several hobbits march their handcuffed prisoner, Stephen Harper, dressed as the evil Lord Sauron, into a Syncrude limited recruiting meeting. They demanded that Sinacrude take him back to Mordor, aka the Alberta tar sands, the hell on earth that he created. So I think that this reenactment, and there's another one that we're going to mention later, this one is actually a political protest. That there had been rumors in the Canadian media, which I'm pretty sure are completely false.
Yeah.
But there had been rumors that the Hobbit film was going to film scenes in Mordor on the tar sands in Alberta. And I presume that the tar sands are probably created by drilling. And anyway, when this rumor started floating around that they were going to be using the tar sands as, to sort of create the, you know, basically to represent Mordor in the film, all these folks started sort of getting upset and tweeting, and the immense social network fired up, and they organized this,
right.
This costumed protest at the Toronto airport.
So it was an environmental protest.
Yes, that's exactly
but the whole
right.
thing was a hoax. So who came up with the hoax?
I think so. I don't know. I'm trying. What I'm trying to figure out is, let's see. In a press release issued today, a troop of Toronto activists calling themselves Black Flood, working alongside the infamous pranksters of the Yes Lab, confirmed their role in the events for the purpose of stirring up some hot and bubbly controversy on the Alberta tar sands. So I think it was, in fact, I'm sure there's some folks that were believing the rumor, but I think it was actually entirely a hoax to, you know, get some publicity for an issue that they cared a lot about.
Okay. And just, they might have just completely come up with a hoax themselves. And And since they link it to The Hobbit, they are sure to get much more media exposure and coverage if they would just, you know, talk about this, their concerns for this particular environmental issue. Mm-hmm. Huh. Interesting. So Tolkien is now used for environmental protests.
Now, that's right. Everyone has managed to appropriate him into their various belief systems, value systems, and other things.
I was reading Josh Vogt's Votes. Vogt, I never know how to pronounce that. V-O-G-T? Is that Vogt? Josh, the Tolkien Examiner.
That sounds probably good. Vogt or Vote, I imagine. Okay.
Well, he is the Tolkien Examiner, and I follow his blog. He blogs a lot about Tolkien and about The Hobbit. And I remember him blogging about a family get-together, and this was about hundreds of people, you know, both adults and kids dressing up as characters from Middle Earth. And there were photos. I'm trying to find the article. It was just great. It's just this... this whole family day, and everybody just dresses up as Tolkien characters, and I know that this is increasingly popular, also in the Netherlands, which you think is like the last country in the world where people get excited about, you know, fantasy movies and the world of, you know, Middle Earth, but there are actually these get-togethers of people, and they have these themes, and it can be like a Tolkien Middle Earth weekend, and then they get together. We have like these castles all over the place, and not all over the place, but we have lots of nice castles and in nice parks, and then they have this Hobbit Day, and everybody has pointy ears or is dressed up as orcs, or, you know, last like a week ago or 2 weeks ago, there was this vampire weekend, and everybody's dressed up as vampires, and it's, I don't know, the I've a parishioner. It was actually an amateur photographer, and he just goes to all these conventions to make pictures because, of course, people have fantastic costumes, and he, usually before Mass, he takes, like, he has this, every week, he takes this catalog of photos that he took at one of these conventions, and it is just mind-baffling to see how much work people put into the making of these costumes. It just looks fantastic, and... I mean, this is way beyond anything that I've ever seen on fan conventions of, you know, like Star Wars. Or people there, too, will put a lot of effort in their costumes, but I don't know. The Stormtroopers, that kind of works, but if I see, you know, another Slave Leia that is twice the size of Princess Leia, better not do that kind of stuff. But... I don't know. I'd love to go to one of these conventions, or perhaps we'll see. Oh, here it is, the article about, that I was looking for. Families celebrate Middle Earth weekend in Birmingham in the UK. Now, this happened in the month of May. A Birmingham suburb was converted into a scene out of J.R.R. Tolkien's Middle Earth this last weekend, as 10,000 people participated in the 12th annual Middle Earth weekend. 10,000 people dressed as dwarves, elves, hobbits, and other familiar Lord of the Rings and Hobbit characters. Partygoers were able to enjoy live music, medieval crafts, Viking battle reenactments. Vikings? Huh? Poetry, games, archery contests, face painting, bus and walking tours, and much more. Middle Earth Weekend is held at Serhole Mill in Hell Green, a childhood haunt of Tolkien's, and a place many consider a main inspiration for the Shire. Now that's interesting. So they are on a location that has inspired Tolkien for the Shire. Each year, the place is filled with booths, crafters, food sellers, role players, and sightseers. Well, yeah. This year, there was also a photography contest with the theme of the trees and leaves of Middle Earth. And that was the same theme that the Tolkien Society had announced for their seminar. Winners of the photography contest will be pulled together for a 2012 calendar that will be made available online. Interesting. 10,000 people talking about interest for the world of Tolkien. That is stunning. There is a slideshow on Josh's blog, and there's also a website that you can go to, which is middleearthweekend.org. So that's middleearthweekend.org.uk, and they show you some photos of what it looks like, and there's also a link to the photography.
Can't believe we missed this.
Yeah, 10,000, we should have been there. Oh boy, amazing. Anyway, I'd love to hear from our audience if there are any people that have costumes or want to tell something about, you know, Middle Earth costume making on the show. That's something I just have no idea what's involved in this world. But apparently, there's a huge audience that loves doing this kind of stuff. So if you
would appear so.
Yeah,
I love the images of these folks dressed up in these Middle Earth costumes sitting in front of microphones.
Yeah, there's and there's some children there, but most of them are adults. And
yes.
I'm looking at this one picture where there's this group photo and there are some costumes in the background. That looks actually like wraiths, like a costume of it looks like the kings in the when Frodo puts on the ring. You know, he sees these creepy ghost-like kings, and that costume on the left looks exactly like that. It's pretty cool.
The picture I'm looking at now has a bunch of people in T-shirts and jeans standing in line for sausages. So some people didn't dress up.
Well, no, it's the sausages that are actually dressed up. They're Middle Earth sausages. They're the famous 11 Seas sausages that you can only eat once a year at a Middle Earth convention.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. There is Gandalf the White. And it looks like Gandalf has put on some weight. In the meantime, while he was fighting on his away mission. Oh, boy. I should not look to too many of those photos. Anyway, we'll include a link to that on our website. Again, the website is thehobbit.sqpn.com. Now, there was also a reenactment near Prague. And what was that? The Czech Republic, right? That's cool.
Yes, I think so. It's pretty interesting. This is actually a reenactment of the Battle of Five Armies, which is the climax of The Hobbit. Let's see. They said they had over 800 people gathered up, dressed up as all kinds of different characters. It says, I guess it started out as a game for Boy Scouts, and it's just keeps growing and growing and growing. And they do it out in the middle of, near the ruins of a castle about 100 kilometers north of Prague. And they fight for the treasure of the dragon Smaug, of course, which is pretty funny. And it's just one of those sort of, you know, like live action role playing things where I guess they use fake weapons and then they go around and fight and beat on each other and pretend to die or kill each other. And there's people dressed up as elves, dwarves, men, orcs. I think you can see just about everything in the picture. Well, I don't see any orcs, but I don't know how they pull off the eagles. That part of the army, the wargs.
This is kind of very popular when it goes to these historical battles, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know that in the U.S. they have these huge reenactments where they play these same battles, and they try to be as faithful as possible to at least in terms of costumes and weapons. I just didn't know that this was also happening with Lord of the Rings stuff. Where do these people gather? Are there websites for that? Or how do you know that something like that is happening? I'm just Googling here for that Prague reenactment, and there's just nothing. Of course, yeah, I'm Googling in English, but I was trying to find stuff on YouTube, but both from those Middle Earth days or the thing in Toronto. I was looking for it. There has to be something on YouTube, but I can't find it.
Come on, aren't there people running around with cell phone cameras filming this stuff?
Of course. Yeah. But the only thing I can find is, like the Prague Symphony Orchestra playing stuff from The Lord of the Rings, like the music, film music. And by the way, Mike Kuipers says that's a true orchestra. Very cool.
They need to consult you, Father, on how to make more effective use of social media to organize these events.
I'm sure that in our audience there are people that know where we can find stuff like that. I'd love to play more YouTube videos or at least audio of these YouTube videos on the show, but we need some links. So if you know some cool stuff, just send us some links or put them on the Facebook page. That's even cooler, because then you can not only post a link, but you can post the video itself on our wall. So go to Secrets of the Hobbit and give us some stuff to check out during the show, because otherwise it's just us talking. So you're doing this to yourself. But I'm just curious, especially if we're talking hundreds of people that are involved. I want to see some video footage of that.
Yeah, me too. I want to see these people beating on each other.
Actually, secretly, I want to participate, but oh well.
Well, of course.
But anyway, you know, it's funny, but because the Czech Republic, I went on vacation there 2 years ago, and we were driving through I was there with friends, fellow priests, and many times I thought that this could be a great, like, alternate location to film, you know, the Hobbit or the Lord of the Rings, because especially the countryside looks very much like what I imagine the Shire to be, you know, Breeland. It's very much like that. Yeah, definitely a Middle Earth type of environment. And then I guess, you know, the Alps could, that's not in the Czech Republic, but there are also, you know, mountain ranges. And I guess that if it had gone haywire over there in New Zealand, there are definitely other places in the world and in Europe where they could have made this movie. But then again, that's much harder because the production crew is English, or it speaks English. And then I'm not sure if in the Czech Republic the communication would be as easy. So let's see. Slowly wrapping up this episode. Is there any other slow news to talk about today? I think we've gone through most of our bullet points.
I haven't
points.
Found anything. Nothing terribly exciting.
Well, then there's one other thing that I want to mention at the end. And that is, as I mentioned before, I've been playing a lot of The Lord of the Rings online. And they've just launched or announced, and this was happening at E3, which is a big games conference, they announced another expansion. And I'm always super excited. They do a lot of updates regularly where they will add a little bit of content, but every once in a while they will do these huge expansions where you get to explore new areas of Middle Earth. And the last big extension was the Mines of Moria. There was a smaller extension that was Mirkwood. And but now they have announced, let me look that up, it's basically the whole Sauron backstory. Let's see, expansion. Let me try to play this on YouTube, because they also did a little video, and it's awesome. Now it's very much inspired by the stuff that we've seen in the movies, but they cannot really use the stuff from the movies because they don't have a license, but they heavily borrow that stuff. It's actually The Rise of Isengard is the name of the expansion. Let me see. Lotro Isengard trailer. There you go. And it's really, really cool. So if you have time, I'll just play the audio, but you have to actually watch this, because it's really, really cool. This is the trailer.
Peggy 12.
Here we go.
Lord of the Rings Online. This is a logo.
Sauron's war has come. His shadow will engulf us all. Yet I do not hope for the dawn. For there is power in the darkness, and I shall make it mine.
This is Sauron, of course. The Rise of Isengard. I thought that this was the trailer, but this is just like a teaser trailer. The real trailer is much longer. I'll play it next week. And perhaps we can talk a bit more about Sauron as well. But it looks really cool, and I am so excited that not only do we get to visit Sauron and his minions and probably the mines and everything, but they also added the Plains of Rohan to Middle-earth. Now, that's an area that I would love to go to. So I'm super excited. This is going to be available later this year, but you can already pre-order. And if you pre-order, you get some extra perks immediately in the game. So you get like a horse, Rohan horse or something like that. And of course, now everybody is going to walk around, going to run around with the same horse because everybody's going to pre-order. If you've never checked out Lotro, you have a PC that is not too old, like I don't know, 2-3 years old. That will probably still work if you have a graphics card. I can highly recommend downloading Lotro. It's free to play, which means you can play without paying, and it works with micropayments. So you can unlock ulterior quests by paying a little bit, or you can just become a VIP member, and then you know you get to play for a monthly fee, just like World of Warcraft. But it's a beautiful game. It strikes me every time I play it. It's like, it feels like I've been visiting Middle-earth. And even if you don't care for the game itself, just getting a taste of Middle-earth is awesome. And of course, if you want to visit the Mines of Moria, then you have to play. It's not like you get a free pass to go visit every area. You actually have to work for it. But
right.
I'm hooked. I'm definitely hooked. And it's the thing that strikes me most and that impresses me always most is that the game makers have a love for Tolkien's work, and there are so many details in the stories that are integrated in the game. You can tell that these people know Tolkien by heart, everything, and so it's I think much more interesting than World of Warcraft. It's more I don't know. There's more Tolkien in there. Any last words, Dave, before we wrap up the show?
Just one. Laura Burkholz furnished me with proof that she, in fact, coined the term Silmarillionaire. So I had to say that on air. Laura Burkholz coined that term, not me.
So every time we use the term Silmarillionaire?
Silmarillionaire.
Silmarillionaire?
We have to pay Laura a nickel.
We have to pay her. And that's how she becomes a Silmarillionaire. Now we understand it. Hey, thanks for listening. Check out our website, thehobbit.sqpn.com. Give us a rating or a review on iTunes. That will help us so much. And let us know that you're out there. Post something via Twitter, SQPN Hobbit or SQPN Tolkien, and visit our Facebook pages, Secrets of the Hobbit and Secrets of Middle Earth. And our email address is tolkien@sqpn.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.